This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. We are scheduled to hear from State Senator Dan Clater about what's going on at the Capitol. Some lawmakers are calling for a veto session. Senator Clater sponsored and successfully steered the bill through the process that was signed by the governor that now requires reporting of the scholarships that the LSU and Southern board members give to students. We'll talk with him about that and much more. Also, Hope Dewan of Volunteers and Public Schools and Tony Pryor, who is also involved with VIPS as the Everybody Reads coordinator, on what's going on with this worthy organization in our community. All this, but now the news on 89.3. WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Works if you try to reach us by email. We begin with Senator Dan Clater, Republican from Baton Rouge, who was a busy man during the recently completed legislative session and has taken, I guess, a well-earned vacation just back from California. How was that?
It was great. I had never been to Yosemite, and we did some hiking there, and my son James did some rock climbing. If you've never been to Yosemite and you have the chance, don't pass it up.
Yeah, and where else did you go?
I was in San Francisco and Palo Alto, down the beach in Carmel. Bouncing around. It was really nice out there.
When people ask you where you're from and you say, I'm from Louisiana, what's the reaction in San Francisco?
They always seem to be envious of the food.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about the politics?
Well, they would ask a little bit about the politics, but not too much. The politics of the moment while I was out there was focused on the Defense of Marriage Act, and so I happened to be in the city meeting some friends for dinner and happened upon a big impromptu celebration in the Castro area.
Were you celebrating too?
Well, they were in a fine spirit themselves, so I certainly wasn't dampening their parade. It was very nice.
So you kept your mouth shut, or did you say, hey, I agree or don't agree with what's going on?
I was neutral.
Neutral. Now you're back in Louisiana. Are you still neutral?
I do believe in marriage being a traditional type marriage, but
traditional in what way?
A man and woman. But as far as those folks' right to celebrate out there, they had every right to do it under the law.
Well, it would seem that your position is similar to that of Governor Jindal. He in his Politico screed of a few weeks ago, said that Democrats, like some of whom I'm sure you saw in California, that they're trying to end traditional marriage. Are they really trying to end traditional marriage, or are they trying to expand marriage?
That's a good question, and I suppose we'll face it in the legislature here before too long and have an expanded discussion on it.
Well, who will be the likely sponsor of a bill of that kind?
Well, I think perhaps J.P. Morrell. I find that's on his radar. Perhaps Karen Peterson seems to be on her radar. Maybe Walt Leger of New Orleans.
But these are New Orleans crowd. New Orleans area people.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah, and you spent some time in New Orleans as a young man.
Fine town. Found a wife there. I am not one that believes that New Orleans ought to be a separate country. I believe it's a part of the heart and soul of Louisiana. I sure enjoy it there.
And despite your obviously strong conservative credentials, there are some issues where you have kind of gone off the ranch, like on evolution. You have been right there with our young man, Mr. Copeland, Andy Copeland's son, Zach Copeland.
Yeah, I don't know if that's off the ranch or not.
The Republican ranch.
I don't necessarily believe all Republicans think that that's the way that we ought to go. So.
Nor do all Democrats believe the other way.
Yeah.
But I would say 90% of the Republicans are in the creation camp.
I can't answer that for you. I can answer it as it relates to District 16, and the majority of folks there don't seem to embrace that idea of in replacement of science.
Well, that you represent a university area.
University, it's a very interesting mix, but basically follow Highland Road from the parish line on into the university. And I have a mixed bag, but the one thing that you can say about most of them is they're very educated, and most of them have a little money in their pockets.
But your district would be somewhat different, I would think, than, say, representing Dry Prong or Dry Creek.
I would say so.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Senator Dan Clater, who, speaking of the university issues, he filed one of the most interesting bills of the session, and surprisingly it got passed, and even more surprisingly the governor signed it. It will require board members for LSU and Southern to reveal who their scholarship recipients are. And I must say, I knew they had scholarships. I didn't know they had 20 of them every year.
20 apiece, two of which would go to out-of-state folks. So that's a significant value when you're talking about out-of-state. When I tallied it up as it relates to LSU, the potential exposure was more than $2 million. So if the Board of Supervisors is handing out more than $2 million in scholarships, it would seem fair and right that we'd know who were the recipients of these scholarships.
$2 million, this is for each board or just for the LSU?
LSU board. The Southern board is significantly less money.
So if it's 20 scholarships
times the number of board supervisors, and in fact, Jim,
which would be 18. Does a student member get a?
No.
Okay, so it'd be 17, I think.
17.
So 20 times 17 is 340, and you're saying it's $2 million a year?
Approximately.
Divided by, what did I say?
340.
340, which would be $5,882. Seems like it'd be more than that.
No. And that it's divided out in that out-of-state is about $7,000 per semester, and they can only award two of those. And then the others go to LSU A&M or any of the other LSU system schools. But the vast majority, when you look at it, is goes to people in the professional schools, LSU Dental School, Medical School, LSU Law School. And, in fact, last night I Googled the term just to see what was going to come up, and there's a letter on the LSU website where the new system president, Mr. King Alexander, is reporting to John Lario and Chuck Cleckley, and there it is, a list of who got the scholarships and awarded by who. It's dated June 27th. So
it's already there?
It's already there.
So you can go where to find it?
Just the LSU website, click or Google LSU Board of Supervisors Scholarships, and it's right there on that portion of
their
website.
Did you look at the names?
I looked at some of the names.
Any surprises?
You know, the number, the members of the board are far and wide, so I can't really say that I jumped out and recognized any of them right away. They also have on that part of the website what you have to do to qualify for it. So that's a pretty interesting bit of information. I could not find the Southern information. But the report is due August 1st.
Okay, but LSU has jumped ahead of the game under the leadership of F. King Alexander. His first week on the job, he says, hey, let's get this done. So that's a good sign. It includes, though, the law school and the med school, right? Like if I were sitting on the board, I would have the opportunity to award a scholarship to any of the LSU campuses.
Yes, and one of the things that it looks like to me as far as the way it works in practice is the kids run through their top scholarship money, and then they get on this particular program.
John in Lafayette. John, good morning. You're on the air with Senator Dan Clater.
Yes, Senator, good morning. I have a question concerning LSU now that we're on that topic. As you know, the state funding of LSU has dropped by 60% in the last 5 years. No faculty raises in 5 years. We're losing quality professors right and left. More are leaving every month. You, as a senator from Baton Rouge, do you assume any responsibility for what is happening to LSU?
Well, I have to, but I, at the same time, if you follow it very closely, you'll see that I am often a voice in the wilderness where, as we dedicated all these various monies to different areas, I pointed out every time that you're just further strangling the flagship agenda in LSU, where when the nursing home constitutional amendment and the other health care type amendments to dedicate money to solely those purposes were up, I got up and spoke about how this is going to have an adverse impact on LSU. And, John, it's very, very discouraging to me that I will talk about LSU and the flagship agenda, and we'll have folks from North Louisiana, and you can just I'll say who it was. It was Mr. Fannin. He makes comments like, I ain't got no LSU where I come from. And so it's an uphill battle for me all the time to point out that, yes, indeed, you do have LSU where you come from. Its graduates are throughout the state and an important product for us to produce. But, yeah, John, I'm part of the legislature, and I have to take some of the responsibility for that. But if you follow it closely, you would know that I'm one that speaks up on behalf of LSU very, very often.
Now, the governor, during this session, did reach out to some lawmakers, met with them individually rather than having staffers do it. Were you one of those who met with the governor?
That offer was extended, and I'm on four committees and have quite a bit on my plate.
You said no to the governor?
I never quite made it up there.
You never made it up there, even though the governor asked. Now, he did endorse your opponent, as we recall, back in 2009.
Yeah, I seem to recall that.
Yeah, is there still bad blood regarding that?
No, politics, if you're angry about everything that is perceived as a slight, you're going to go around angry way too much, and life is too short for me to be upset about that.
But I must say, most lawmakers would, even if they disagreed with the governor mightily, they would, in fact, view this as an opportunity to maybe go chew him out straight to his face. But you said, you know, I'm busy. I got four committee hearings. I'll see you sometime soon.
Yep.
Jason and Clinton. Jason, you're on the air with Dan Clater. Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all doing today?
Good morning, Jason. Thanks for asking. I'm great.
Good deal. Senator Clater, you probably may remember who I am. I'm Jason Durham. And I'm with OTVLA, and you really went to bat for us during the session for the developmental disabled, and I wanted to thank you for that.
All right, what's your question, Jason?
You went over and above. The question we have is with the override veto session coming on board or possibly coming on board, where do you stand on the override veto session? Would that be something that you would support?
Jason, as a practical matter, I don't think it's going to happen. Obviously I was very disappointed with the way the governor treated folks with disabilities and have a strong disagreement with his reasoning in the veto portion of the HB1. I did a little tweet on it, and it ended up on the front page of the newspaper.
The quote was, yikes.
Yikes.
Yikes. Right.
Yeah. Governor,
you better watch that Twitter stuff.
Yeah, governor sticks it to folks with disabilities. But my son had got me involved in that. But, Jason, I expect we'll get a fair amount of signatures for that. And I've been out of town. I'm going to consider it. I know we have a timeline on it. But as a practical matter, I don't want to get the folks in the disability community any false hopes on this, and that they've already been crushed enough, in my view. But thanks for the call.
Well, it's very hard, as the senator says, to get a veto session. Legislators in modern history have never returned to Baton Rouge after a regular session. And the way this works, it's kind of interesting. Some might say bizarre. Forms go into the mail asking the 144 lawmakers to declare a veto override session. Unnecessary. So you're basically confirming a negative.
Yeah.
And a majority of the members of either chamber must return the forms to prevent a veto override session from automatically continuing. So if they don't return their forms, at least if enough, 53 in the House and 20 in the Senate, then there's a veto session. So are you going to return your form?
I'm going to pull out my form and study it. There were eight items that he vetoed. And one thing that I thought you would find interesting, Jim, one of the things that he vetoed was a ethics bill. And the two votes that were against the bill on the floor were myself and none other than Karen Peterson. So I found that interesting that Karen Peterson and the governor were voting together.
With you.
With me.
Well, we'll find out about that. That only three out of 40 agreed, and it was Karen Peterson, Dan Clater, and Bobby Jindal on an ethics measure. We'll find out why when we return 297-5633 is your number. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Engster Show at WRKF.org online. Senator Dan Clater in the House for a while longer. Daniel Albert Clater, who was born, one day before, one day after President Obama?
One day before.
Yeah. August 3rd, 1961.
Yep, I'm finally older than the president. Never thought that would happen. But
Well, Bill Moyers has said that that's one of the big moments in a man's life is when he realizes he's older than the president of the United States. He says it was tough on him when Clinton became president.
Well, I thought I was safe with Reagan types. Maybe we'll see what happens. But, yep, older than the president.
Older than the president. Now, what about this ethics measure that you and Senator Peterson and the governor agreed on, agreed it was a bad thing, and all 37 other senators said it was a good thing? What happened?
It was a waiver of the ethics rules as it related to small municipalities, where there's, in these smaller municipalities, apparently they struggle on finding some suppliers and people of that sort who frequently happen to be members of the local rural government, but I don't think that that's a good path to go down. We'll make exceptions for these smaller guys. Well, then they're having trouble in the mid-sized cities, and then next thing you know, we're having trouble in the legislature, and we throw all of those out. So that was an interesting mix.
One of the eight that Governor Jindal vetoed.
Correct.
297-5633, Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Dan.
Yes. Did you vote for the pay raises for judges and high-ranking state officials making six-figure salaries while civil service employees haven't had a pay raise for years?
Dan, I did vote for pay raises for judges.
And you're a lawyer. You might have to be in court with some of those judges.
Well, that's true, but at the same time, we're below the southern average, where I think it's important to pay the going rate for judges. I personally think your quality potentially suffers when you don't offer a reasonable return for these men and women. So, yes, I did vote for that.
On Friday, the Louisiana Supreme Court handed down a decision declaring unconstitutional the only piece of Bobby Jindal's 2012 pension reform plan to pass the legislature. Were you surprised?
No, because I was knocking around Yosemite having a great time, totally unaware. I was hiking it up to Vernal and Nevada Falls.
The court do the right thing?
Sounds like they did. You always have to say the court did the right thing.
How did you vote on that?
I voted for a good bit of the pension reform. What concerned me, I brought a particular bill that Dan downtown might have appreciated, which is the
all this time I thought you were Dan downtown.
Yeah, and there it happens. There we're throwing you off. That's my evil twin. But thing that I see happen a lot in the systems is spiking, and unless you're in government, you kind of miss that. And so you ordinarily retire with something around your last 3 years pay average, and then what'll happen is somebody. The bill I filed, somebody from the legislature had the opportunity to go to work like, say, Troy Hebert in the government, and they went from basically a $16,000 a year salary with these older guys that had been in the system for a long time to a $150,000 salary like Dan's talking about, and then they retired on that if they got 3 years in. So these anti-spiking type statutes I thought were a good thing that keeps people from sticking it to the system at the end of their tenure.
Here's a question from James Guy. Did the state amnesty tax plan in the last session, and has it been signed by the governor? There's yes, but what's your take on that?
Well, it's interesting to me in the sense that the fiscal hawks in their confederation insisted that the tax amnesty plan occur over a three-year period so that it could be deemed reoccurring income. And so they tortured that particular bill into such a fashion that I don't know what good it'll actually do, but it'll be deemed reoccurring, if nothing else, and able to be plugged into the budget in a fashion that is satisfactory to that group.
Question from Kerry downtown. What's your take, Senator, on Governor Jindal signing the Equal Pay for Women Act into law?
I'm happy he signed it.
You were in favor of that one?
Yeah, I was in favor of it when it ended up. That's a very long discussion about how what remedies are there. That bill got whittled down to such that it applied to state employees only. And so there's some questions about whether or not that actually accomplished anything.
Would you be in favor of something like that for the private sector?
I did not vote for that in favor of the private sector when it was on the floor. We had a lot of discussions about what other remedies were there. Mm-hmm. And in my view, there are plenty of other remedies that are there.
Well, on the surface, it seems like an easy call that women should get paid as much as men.
Yeah, and it wasn't written that way as for women when it was on the floor. It was for sex would not be a determinant. So it would also mm-hmm. be for men if women were occupying the higher paying positions.
Well, yeah, so men could make a claim as well.
Yep.
Well, what would be wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with making a claim, but there's frankly a lot of other venues for you to be able to do that. There's federal protections that are in place. We already have a human rights commission here in Louisiana that's supposed to investigate those issues. So that would be belts, suspenders, and perhaps rope as well. I don't know. It's lots of different protections would be placed there where two already are in place, and I didn't think an additional one was necessary myself.
What about belts, suspenders, and rope?
I'm saying if you wear your belt, you probably don't need suspenders. They have federal law in place, and okay. We also have state law in place that addresses those issues, so I didn't see the need for additional legislation on it myself.
Okay, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Last week, the governor responded to criticism of his vetoes, and he says, last week, I signed House Bill 1, Louisiana's budget bill for the next fiscal year, despite reports to the contrary. The final budget that was signed into law does not include any cuts for people with developmental disabilities who are currently receiving waiver services. Is that accurate?
He most definitely cut the services that the legislature put into the bill. I guess you could say it's accurate of saying it was a change from the bill that he presented to the legislature. So I guess we could say that's semantics, but you asked the people that were looking forward to coming off the waiting list whether or not that was a cut, and I think they would certainly agree that was a cut.
Well, John Bel Edwards, the Democratic leader in the House, says in the last session, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents worked together in good faith, reached compromises, and advanced the common good. That's exactly how it should be. How long can we continue in this spirit of cooperation with the goal of the common good when we have a governor, writes Mr. Edwards, who falsely accuses almost three-quarters of the people he governs of being faithless, selfish, and just plain evil?
I missed that editorial, but I can't say that. I missed the context of that. He came out and said that three-quarters of Louisiana is evil. I miss that.
Yeah, there was in that Politico screed in which he railed against people outside the Republican Party, saying we need to beat up on the other guys. In Louisiana, three-quarters of the people are not Republican. I guess that's what Representative Edwards is referring to.
Well, I think that's political rhetoric on both sides. I like John Bell as a person. He's there representing his people. He's got a service record and a good guy. I like the governor, but that's just people that are jockeying and saying fluff and getting headlines, I guess.
Well, the governor put a lot on the table, a lot of meat to consume a few days ago when he wrote this essay in Politico. And our producer, Kevin Gallagher, did a well-received dramatic reading of the governor's missive, and we don't have 3 minutes to hear it all, even though Kevin was reading in warped speed. But do you have some highlights of that, Kevin? Okay, let's hear.
The overall level of panic and apology from the operative class in our party is absurd and unmerited. It's time to stop the bedwetting. No more self-analysis. We've had our catharsis. The season for navel-gazing is past. No more self-analysis. We've had our catharsis. The season for navel-gazing is past.
All right, okay.
No more self-analysis.
I think we got the idea. He also said you Republicans, need to put on your big boy pants.
I got my big boy pants on, and I wear them all the time. And being PO'd is not the same thing as being a bedwetter.
Okay, all right. So you're kicking it back to the governor.
Yeah, I'll kick it back to anybody else that wants to get into a conversation with me, but I was not happy with the cuts to folks with disabilities. And to say, talking about bedwetting, something that sounds like I know you are, but what am I, is ridiculous. Those were real cuts, and those people need those services.
Well, several people have defended the governor by saying they doubt that he wrote that. Actually, I think he did write every word, because no speechwriter would allow something like that to get out, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's reminiscent of his promenade out for the Republican response. But
he didn't talk like that, although he did say that the rail thing from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, he called it Disneyland to Las Vegas, that kind of thing. That put him in a box where he couldn't approve the one from Baton Rouge to New Orleans.
That's true. But, you know, we're always going to have plenty of rhetoric and saber rattling and whatnot, but I would like to see that we make some progress on these various issues.
Well, you're a linebacker. It's you probably will leave more action than talk.
I like action. That's true.
Rose in Sherwood. Rose, good morning. You're on with Dan Clater.
Yes, good morning, Jim and Mr. Clater. I'd like to know, how do you feel about the governor's rejection of the federal Medicaid money?
All right.
The short answer is that he's the guy that has the power to do it. So whether the legislature approved it or disapproved it, at the end of the day, he's the only guy that had the power to do it. In the short run, it certainly leaves money on the table. In the long run, and where it takes us, I'm not so sure about that. So as a practical matter, and where did I vote? I was one of the lucky ones that had a chance to vote in health care and finance on this issue. And in both cases, I voted against advancing it.
Against?
Advancing the idea of requiring the governor to sign the Obamacare, whatever
so
term
you
want to use.
So you were giving the legislature a way to do this without the governor's...
No, there's no way for the legislature to do it without the governor's signing off on it. Arkansas designed a plan that they thought that would work along those lines, where you could say, I'm not going along with you, President Obama, but I've designed a plan that works for us in Arkansas. And so there were some attempts on the Louisiana legislature side to design something along that line. But the further we got into it, the short answer was, unless the governor signed off on it, it wasn't going to happen. The way that the bill, the Health Care Act, is written, the legislature is not the group that approves it.
Were you for or against the Nevers measure?
Remind me on
he sponsored the bill that would have allowed Louisiana to basically co-opt the Arkansas plan, and he was trying to get support.
No,
and he didn't get enough.
Yeah, I was against that.
Okay,
one.
So you...
That's
things
why
are often not black and white, but you were more in the governor's camp on this than in Senator Nevers and Senator Peterson's.
Correct.
Okay. Dan Clater, are you running for Congress?
I don't expect so. No, I don't. I like the idea of being in Congress, but in practice, I don't think that that's the right thing for me at this time. I have an obligation to the people in District 16 to serve out my term here, so I expect that'll be for someone else. Things can change. I guess you should never say never, but my plate is full at the moment.
Do you think Governor Jindal will run for the U.S. Senate?
I think that's really a possibility. Where does 44, you're better on the numbers, guy. Is he 44?
42.
42-year-old.
Young guy.
Yeah, where is a 42-year-old?
10 years younger than you.
Yeah. But he'll catch up with me if speaking quickly ages you. I can never keep up with his diction. But at any rate, where does that guy go at this point? And so if you want to remain in, I think he's got to go into Congress.
Well, when you came in here today, I said he's not running for Congress because now you've got the beard back.
I've been on vacation. The beard comes and goes.
But you were clean shaven there for a while.
Yeah, that's true. I try to remain clean shaven during the session.
Okay. 297-5633, Ashley in Broadmoor. Ashley, you're on with Senator Claytor.
Good morning, Senator Claytor. Just wanted to sort of come back with what Governor Jindal had issued about not cutting services for individuals with developmental disabilities. Two issues that he fought hard for us this session were children's special health services and the individual and family support program, which were direct cuts to individuals who are waiting for a NOW waiver, and their services that are dire to these families that sit on a waiting list for up to 10 years. So he did make cuts, and even for people on a NOW waiver, some of these children do receive services at those children's special health services clinics, and it was a direct cut to them. So he wasn't accurate when he made that statement and issued that press release.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think about that other bill that I filed, the Board Scholarship Reporting Act, where the shorthand version for that is the BS report, and so that kind of smacks of that.
The Board Scholarship Reporting Act?
Yeah, the BS report.
BSRA, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There is there have been a few inquiries. Robin wants to know the website again where she can access the recipients of the LSU Board Scholarships.
Yeah, it's the LSU website. Go to the Board of Supervisors.
It's LSU.edu, isn't it?
I think so, but you navigate like you're looking to get awarded that LSU scholarship from the Board of Supervisors, and it tells you what those requirements are, and it gives you the report on who gets the scholarships.
Okay. What about L.A. Swift? Could be the end of the trail at the end of the month, but there are efforts to keep it going. It's only $750,000 in state money. What's your take on the discontinuation of L.A. Swift?
Well, we were talking about trains earlier, and I did speak to the governor once upon a time about the issues of as it relates to mass transit for folks going back and forth between Baton Rouge and New Orleans and in between. And the thinking that I understood, or at least the way it was explained to me, was if we had bus services that were running well and people were using those, then you might think that rail services were appropriate. So I think the short version on this is that federal money is running out and there's not going to be funding of that. Where you say it's just $750,000.
But the way I understand it, if the state puts up the $750,000, the feds will contribute $1.5 million.
Yeah, and I was a believer that a small amount of money like that would help people with disabilities.
Get to New Orleans and back.
Yeah.
See folks in wheelchairs.
You go into the VA and whatnot. So I would like to see it continue.
Well, there is an effort to keep it going, but right now, if things don't change, it ends on July 31st, 3 days before Senator Claytor turns 52 years old. We'll be back with Senator Claytor after this 90-second pause, and we'll also hear from some folks from volunteers and public schools. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Senator Dan Claytor, Republican from Baton Rouge, who is a man who many suspect will run for some other office at some time. He just said that Congress is probably not the office he will seek. Maybe Attorney General?
Perhaps, but we've got two more sessions to get through. So that's a possibility, but I'm not, I guess, talking about Bobby Jindal. I can use one of his lines, I have the job I want.
I think it's the job I love, the job I've always wanted, the job I cherish.
All right. Well, I'm very happy with the job that I have, and it's a great opportunity to serve.
But being a lawmaker is a part-time job.
That's what they say, but that's not really the way it is in practice.
I notice you still have a law office, so you probably do other things other than hang out at the legislature.
I do, and I try very hard to make a living as a lawyer, and it's a hard balancing act between the legislature and being in the private sector as well.
You told me a few years ago you were going to read every word of every bill you voted on. Do you still do that?
Yeah, it's tough. It'll wear you out.
That's why you're wearing those eyeglasses, right?
Yeah, there's some of those kooky ones that come apart in the middle, but that way I don't lose them.
All right. Chuck wants to know, will you be supporting a candidate for governor in 2015?
I expect I will, but I'm not a big believer in a string of endorsements makes a candidate. And as you pointed out earlier in the broadcast, I wasn't supported by the governor and did just fine. And I'm sure they've got lots of great candidates that the support that's important is those of the voters and getting out there and getting those. So it's more important to have your third grade teacher endorsing you as a candidate than some politician. At least that's the way I feel.
Well, some people believe that the lack of support for LSU in this community, by the governor's office as far as budget matters, is related to the fact that he's not an LSU person. Would it help to have somebody like a Jay Darden or some of the others who are running for governor who have a closer affiliation with the state's flagship university?
I would say that it certainly wouldn't hurt, but LSU is not the only one that has suffered through this.
It's been higher ed.
But you represent
LSU.
Yeah, well, I represent LSU, but in my view, I also represent Northwestern and Southern and all the other higher ed institutions throughout the state. But I think it's putting a premium on higher ed in general that's important.
But Governor Jindal, who was a very bright man, and when he graduated from high school, I think when he was 16, he graduated in 88. He probably was about to turn 17 on June 10th. But he chose to go to Brown University. He chose to go out of state for school, and he got a great education. But he may not have the heartstrings for LSU or other state universities that some others do.
Well, perhaps, but I really don't think that it's purely a matter of heartstrings. I think it's perhaps gray matter is more important than heartstrings, and that supporting our flagship agenda, from my point of view, is an easy call, that we ought to do that, and we ought to support higher ed. But an example of not everybody supporting higher ed in the same way was this Senator Adley bill to fund the
community colleges.
Community colleges outside of HB1. So not everybody goes to college, and we certainly have to have a lot of other opportunities for those that choose not to be able to be in position to have a good job. But at the end of the day, LSU, the flagship agenda, is a huge part of Louisiana and needs to be supported in such a way that we're not losing faculty and staff.
Well, if the governor were here, he probably would point out that he has fought and successfully preserved the TOPS program that hasn't been cut despite some efforts of lawmakers. Is that a good thing?
I am a believer in TOPS and believe that it should be supported, but at the same time, I do think that it needs to be tuned up and that it rewards, in my view, mediocrity, and that the bar ought to be a good bit higher than where it is right now. And to that, I think the students would pick up their game and continue to clear the bar wherever we set it.
Where would you like to set it?
Well,
4-0? You got to make a 4-0?
Well, I would like to at least see it in the 3 range, in that 2.5 is not something that that's kind of everybody gets
that's
a trophy mentality.
That's all it takes is a 2.5?
2.5, and I want to say a 22 or 20, maybe a 20 on the
ACT.
Yeah, I had a 36. Mind lapse here.
Yeah, you remember what you scored on that, Senator, on the ACT?
No, I don't, but I do remember that I scored very well on the SAT. I got offers from a lot of out-of-state colleges myself.
Okay, Wade at Louis. Please be brief. Wade, you're on with Senator Dan Clater.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I was wondering if you're ready to raise revenues in order to fix the budget instead of all this cutting and shifting and selling assets and one-time and contingency funding and all that kind of stuff. Will you do that for us?
All right. Would you be in favor of any kind of tax increases?
Not at this time. If you would go through HB1 and look at where the money went, there's plenty of places that I find that aren't particularly necessary. I sit on finance and heard all these different presentations and went through the bill where I really don't believe that it's necessary to raise revenues at this point.
If you stay in the Senate, would you like to be Senate president someday?
You know, it seems like that would be nice, but where you were talking about balancing your life and continuing a private law practice, I think it would be hard to be the Senate president and give that everything that you have and at the same time continue with a private practice. That being said, sure, I'd like to be Senate president.
There you go. Okay, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Jim. And I hope that waffle machine is fixed over there at Louis Wade.
Okay, is that where you're headed next?
I'd like to be, but I'm heading to the office.
Okay. In studio is Hope DeWan. She is the volunteer director with Volunteers in Public Schools, and we're going to talk with her and with Tony Pryor, who is the Everybody Reads coordinator, and this is one of the worthy endeavors in our community, VIPS. Good morning, Hope.
Good morning, Jim.
You've been with VIPS for how long now?
This is my third year with VIPS.
And VIPS does a few different things in the community, including something called Stuff the Bus and Unstuff the Bus. What is this?
Right. Well, it's actually a donation event that's put on by WBRZ. We provide the volunteers. We go out there to the Office Depot on College Drive, and people come in and they buy supplies to donate to the students of East Baton Rouge Parish Public Schools. And so it's a long, hot day, but it's very fun. It's very active, and you get to meet some great people, get to be on TV a little bit, and help the students. Well, yeah. but you get to help the students of East Baton Rouge Parish have the supplies that they need at the beginning of the school year.
Well, your organization works closely with businesses and other community organizations partnering with schools. How is that working?
It's working great. We always need more volunteers and want more partnerships in the schools. And we're making a big effort for next school year to provide different volunteer projects on a monthly basis for businesses and other community organizations that want to get involved with schools but don't necessarily have the time to get involved with the programs that we provide in the schools throughout the school year that may have more commitment involved.
Well, I see July 17th, which is just 16 days away, you have something involving the Stuff the Bus program. Well, what's going to happen on the 17th?
Well, that is Stuff the Bus. Right. And our volunteers, if you want to volunteer for that, you can go on the website, vips.ebrschools.org, to register. There are several two-hour shift
options. That's what you asked for, a two-hour commitment?
Right. Of course, volunteers can sign up for more than 2 hours. And we're looking for at least 10 volunteers per shift so that we can sort the supplies, collect them, and box them, and stuff the bus.
It's an all-day affair, I would think.
Yes, it is all day.
Now, volunteers sort, organize, box supplies to be placed on the buses, and the buses are provided by the school system, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And two-hour shift. And of course, we're talking hot time of the year.
It's hot out there, but we have
to wear a coat and tie. And
wear something very comfortable but appropriate. But we have tents out there. We have water for our volunteers. And during the lunch shift, Raising Cane's provides lunches. And throughout the day, they provide us lemonade. And, of course, we're right outside of the Office Depot on College Drive. So you go inside and you kind of get out of the heat for a little bit. If we don't have volunteers who can come for Stuff the Bus, our Unstuff the Bus is the next day at Highland Elementary, and that is inside. It is air conditioned, and that's when we actually package the supplies to be sent to every public school in the parish.
On July the 18th will be the Unstuff the Bus. In your 3 years, what's the biggest success story you've had?
I think it was last year when I was the Everybody Reads coordinator. I'm very proud of the program and how we're able to help students improve in their reading skills. Mm-hmm. And we had two professors from Southern University to come in and actually analyze our program to see exactly what our volunteers do to help the students improve. And what they found was that our volunteers, especially if they visit their students at least 20 times during the school year, were able to close the achievement gap in reading very significantly in first and second grade.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Toni Pryor, the Everybody Reads coordinator, in just a moment. That's the job that Hope had. She's now the volunteer director. How many volunteers do you have with VIPS?
It ranges. Since I'm not the Everybody Reads coordinator now, I have to include everyone Counts and Voyage and our general volunteers. It can range around the thousands. So we have a lot of volunteers. And
well, for those who'd like to be a volunteer, what's the best way to find out how they would do it?
You visit our website.
Which is?
VIPS, V-I-P-S, ebrschools.org. And, Jim, we're also on Facebook and Twitter. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you do that, then we can enter you in a drawing for a spa treatment at the medical spa, thanks to one of our eye care co-workers, Gwen Shamlin. His sisters own that store. So we're trying to get into the 21st century, into social media, to get more volunteers to know VIPS. So like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and go to our website to get more information.
Toni Pryor is the Everybody Reads coordinator. It's maybe the major endeavor of this organization. Toni, how did you get involved?
Well, I began working with VIPS about 4 months ago, applying as the Everybody Reads coordinator, and I'm kind of still getting my feet wet, but in terms of how did I get involved, I've always heard of VIPS even through my former employment because I've worked with children and youth for about the last 15 years. So VIPS has always been in the forefront, and I'm just here. I'm glad I'm here and be able to, you know, get the word out, get the message out a little bit more about our program.
Tell me about the Everybody Reads All-Stars. Who are the All-Stars?
The All-Stars are the students that participated in Everybody Reads throughout the school year. And so far we have about 130 students that signed up. We have a lot of students that are very, very eager to get those books. The program, the summer program, what it does, the students will have an opportunity to receive free books throughout the summer. And all they would have to do is complete a very short book report, return it back to VIPS via a self-addressed stamped envelope, and they'll receive another book.
Now, for the people who are volunteers or would like to become volunteers, you want to keep those you have who are enjoying it,
right,
and producing good results. But for those, you can always do more, I'm sure. But for those who'd like to do this, you have a training program, I would think, don't you?
Right. We have a very simple but complete training program that our volunteers can, or anyone who's interested, can come in to receive a 1.5-hour training, complete a background check, and once that background check comes back clear, they're approved for volunteering.
What kind of training do you get in 90 minutes?
Well, what we do is we do cover a lot of material, but we do talk about the actual application of Everybody Reads, mm-hmm, and how to. We look at it more from a tutorial standpoint. It is an intervention model, and we give all potential, mm-hmm, reading friends as much information as we can.
And Toni and Hope, the kids who benefit from this, generally how old are they?
They're usually in grade range of kindergarten through third grade. However, these students typically are 1 or 2 grade levels behind in reading.
Does the training usually take place at the school, at the VIPS headquarters, at the home, or where does it usually happen?
We offer trainings. Right now, I am doing individual trainings at the VIPS office. However, we are in the process of scheduling various venues around town, such as the East Baton Rouge Public Libraries, you know, different sites, the IRC building off of South Foster. We have a couple of different sites, and anyone who's interested can go to the website to see where these sites
are. Your office is on Florida, right?
No, actually, the VIP's office is at 4070 Tunica Street in Baton Rouge. The zip is 70805.
Oh, could you give that address again, Tony?
4070 Tunica Street, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70805.
And your website once again?
You can contact me directly at Everybody Reads. That's Everybody Reads with an S.
At ebrschools.org.
I told you I'm new.
Everybody Reads at ebrschools.org.
But you can also go to VIPS, VIPS.ebrschools.org.
All right, got to go. But thank you, Hope. Thank you, Tony. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.